So, Roger Penrose no longer is a staunch supporter of conformal cyclic cosmology. However, he hasn't completely ruled it out. One of the things to pay attention as it relates to this theory is the conformal part of it. The ability to rescale across dimensions and replicate results. And what I find interesting about this is it is a direct tie-in to how I define the reality of the natural state of nature. When you realize the natural state of nature is an infinite number of separate nested pockets of relative pressurized space-time, mass energy, heat radiation, you begin to then realize where there can be a repetition at a conformal scale factor. And it is, as I have said before many times, based on an understanding of the true dimensions of reality. Once you appreciate and understand that dimensions extend to more than just movement through space and time, but your movement through both energy and mass as well, you can see how our fifth dimension, the dimension of energy, is the majority of our quantum fields in a way. You know, how energy manifests at different points in space-time. Space-time events tied to not only a representation of mass energy at a point in time, but its equivalent implications on the space-time around it. All of which is fully dynamic. And just as you can track the course of a body through space or time, so can you track its position along the line of energy or mass, and even predict where it may end up based on a starting set of conditions. When you accept what dimensions truly are, and understand that every single dimension that becomes a higher dimension must include a new line of measurement where you are visible, not you, but whatever that lower dimensional body is, must be visible on two or more positions along this new line of measurement. It is that new line of measurement that dictates a new dimension. Then your ability to traverse that line is no different than your ability to traverse space-time or time-space. But I digress. Something I do fairly frequently, if you've listened to my podcasts. Excuse me. So, the conformal part, which ties to a rescaling, is in fact what I have many times said is the repetition of a specific density of mass, density of energy, density of space, and density of time, potentially including the density of heat. Each of these separate dimensions not only have scalar and vectors, but they include the ability to include dilation or expansion tied to separate pockets of space-time, because each separate pocket of space-time has its base perception of space and time relative to all other frames of reference, thanks to a hierarchy of that successive parent frames of reference, where every two frames of reference include a common parent at some higher level. And with that common parent known, you can traverse down to each separate pocket of space-time and determine its base perception of space and time. But again, I digress. The point being the conformal part of cyclic cosmology, because we do in fact have cyclic cosmology. The difference between my explanation for cyclic cosmology and the majority of the other explanations is because the majority of our current explanations for the creation of our tiny, infinitesimal point in space and time that we call our visible universe is to believe that it somehow originated from a tiny golf ball, something smaller than a golf ball. All the matter, the mass, the energy, the heat, everything that makes up our visible universe, starting from some tiny, tiny golf ball, quantum fluctuations of cold, dark matter at temperatures we can't explain. Sorry, no. That was a very poor assumption made based on the scientific knowledge at the time. As we now understand quantum mechanics, gravity, special relativity, general relativity, and cosmology, and all the evidence, the observational evidence we now have, and all the AI analyzing the data, it is just a matter of time before we see that successive collision theory is in fact the real answer. A succession of collisions at ultra-high speeds, potentially reaching twice the speed of light and potentially surpassing twice the speed of light. That's what happens when two frames of reference far, 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 far removed in a single parent frame of reference cross paths, because it happens an infinite number of times every infinitesimal second of every moment of existence. There's an infinite number of collisions at an infinite number of different scale factors. And when you have a repetition of that density of that heat across a density of space and a density of time and a density of mass and a density of energy, you will find a repetition of something we call leptons, quarks, and the periodic table. Our periodic table, or something very, very similar to it, repeats at an infinite number of scale factors. That is what the true multiverse is actually all about. Because you can see how we go outwards, but not in bubbles. There are no fucking bubbles. There are pockets of space-time because there is no inflation. Bubbles imply inflation. There was never a period of inflation, but there has been a never-ending succession of expansion from the very moment our universe began until now. There's an exponentially increasing rate of expansion that we are experiencing and will continue to experience for an eternal length of time within our largest measurable pocket of space-time. That is the natural state of nature. An infinite number of separate nested pockets of relative pressurized mass energy, space-time, heat radiation. Oh, geez, where'd that come from? Okay, that is very unprofessional for a podcast now, isn't it? Okay, so, where was I? Conformal cyclic cosmology. It makes an assumption that at some starting point in time, the state of space-time was at a density we will expect from the ending state of our visible universe. When the last quantum event passes, the last particle created from that hot, dense energy that spawned in the beginning moments of our universe, when the last of it dissipates, when the last photons dissipate, the less stars, black holes, they finally dissolve and radiate away. Sometimes there are natural processes, and other times there are collisions. Eventually, molten cores are no longer molten, and you have planets that used to be planets that are now just big-ass asteroids. And all the asteroids, all the thermal pockets within them have long since died out. The stars have died out. So we have the big freeze and the heat death of the universe. But the collisions never end. And every single collision brings with it energy and heat. And sometimes those collisions occur between bodies that have such a far removed parent frame of reference that the relative kinetic energy between those collisions exceeds twice the speed of light or approaches twice the speed of light. And when that happens, one of the two intersecting pockets will have a higher relative velocity within the parent frame of reference they share. No matter how many times they are removed from that parent frame of reference, maybe 10,000, maybe 100,000 nested parent frames of reference, maybe 1 million, maybe 10 million. That's a number we may never be able to calculate. We may never know how many nested pockets made up our pockets that collided and what the differential was between their frame of reference. But between them, one of them would have had a greater relative velocity within that parent frame of reference. So when we have collisions that approach twice the speed of light, where one of those bodies or pockets is moving faster compared to that shared parent frame of reference, however many parent frames of reference up you have to go, you eventually hit something that will dictate when those two bodies collide, the direction that mass, well, it's not mass at that point. At that point, it's just hot energy, high energy photons, hot photons, infrared photons, pure energy, no mass, moving close to twice the speed of light. And so we will have some amount of forward momentum that exceeds light speeds, superluminal traversal of space-time by mass energy, or just energy with immeasurable mass. The mass is always there. The mass doesn't go away. It can become immeasurable when the energy is really hot. But plenty of leftovers of all different sizes and shapes would result when two stellar nurseries intersected at twice the speed of light, or potentially even higher. Sorry about that. We can have two galactic nurseries intersecting with kinetic energy of those collisions between neutron stars and black holes that approach twice the speed of light. We could have hundreds, we could have thousands, we could have potentially millions. And when we have that occurring, the thickness of what we would consider a cosmic filament would be directly related to the mass of the two bodies that collided. And the length of a cosmic filament could be directly related to the relative velocity of those superluminal collisions. Huge amounts of mass would vaporize into hot plasma energy. Now, right now, we're talking about a Big Bang based on quantum fluctuations and heat that approaches 10 to the 35 Kelvin. We have no way, no scientific process or theory to explain how to reach 10 to the 35 Kelvin. But we're saying that just some sort of quantum fluctuation at tiny, tiny scale factors can produce that incredible heat that it takes 380,000 years of cooling to reach recombination. Without any possible way to explain how that much heat comes from something like conformal, uniform, empty space-time. Because that's what part of the conformal says, is that eventually you reach a nature space-time that is absolutely uniform and in all aspects, almost to the point of being empty. The truth is, it will never reach anything conformal because there will be asteroids, planets, moons of all different shapes and sizes constantly colliding, constantly getting smaller, and for brief periods of time, creating new life. When a black hole and a neutron star collide at 1.8 the speed of light and nothing else around it, you'll get a handful of galaxies, or a galaxy at least. Just like our entire visible universe has siblings, all playing follow the leader, all following the most massive body or bodies in a spherical, spiral dance of life. That is the true nature of pockets of space-time, not bubbles. There are no bubbles. There is no inflation. There is no inflaton. There was never a period of inflation. There is no inflaton field. All made up because we had to extrapolate backwards from what we knew about recombination to come up with a single starting point. Instead of accepting our visible pocket of space-time was due to the intersecting paths of two pockets of space-time where there were many collisions and secondary collisions and third collisions. And as those collisions occur at potential superluminal speeds, the brightest, whitest parts of our filaments making up the most massive collisions, we see in turn that point where those superluminal speeds first break the luminal barrier. They they slow down to the speed of light. This happens potentially as very, very energetic waves of energy, hot energy, can include swirling pockets of energy creating magnetic and electric fields moving through space-time that can become repulsive or attractive. They can aggregate or disperse, and in doing so, slow down to produce mass by slowing down below the speed of light. This happens through the subquantum and quantum interactions of mass energy at high energies as it cools. That's the true nature of space and time. That is the true nature of what created our tiny little speck of dust, cosmic dust, we call our visible universe. Part of a much larger piece we will never see, never be able to experience the larger pocket of space-time we are a part of, or that parent frame of reference where our siblings are sharing a trajectory through space-time with us. That's the true nature of both space and time. We acquire our perception of space and time from our most direct parent frame of reference. All gravitational fields acting upon us, as well as our velocity within that parent frame of reference, further refine our perception of both space and time that we in turn pass on to our child bodies. Those child bodies can be single cohesive objects or groups of cohesive gravitationally bound objects also playing follow the leader at a smaller scale. That is the nature of space-time. Our visible universe in turn is in orbit or being orbited or both or potentially on a collision course. We will never know. We will never be able to aggregate the data from the external edges of our pocket, not bubble, of space-time, and aggregate that data together to determine our rotational period and revolutional period and where we are heading in space-time at a much larger scale factor. But that information does in fact exist because it is true. It is in fact impossible to be any other way. Once you accept time must be eternal, the true nature of time is eternal, and all you have to do is base one logical deduction from that starting point forward, and it becomes self-evident that there must be an infinite multiverse made from an infinite number of separate nested pockets of space-time at an infinite number of separate scale factors. Because the faster you move through space, the slower you move through time. Therefore, bodies sharing the same relative trajectory, relative velocity, experience that same base perception of both space and time. It is that base perception of space and time that in turn is changed by a internal velocity and internal gravity impacting any single body of space-time or cohesive bodies of space-time that determines their perception of space and time that they pass on to their child bodies. It is that nested nature of space-time that explains the creation of our visible universe, dark energy, potentially dark matter, what came before our universe, what caused our universe, the nature of space-time, the nature of space and time, and so many other mysteries of science. And if you start this podcast from the beginning, I believe you will see there is, in fact, a very logical explanation for why we exist and most of the questions of space-time that currently plague our current paradigm. Paradigms built upon a foundation, a shared foundation made on an assumption that infinite space and eternal time is speculative. Toggle that assumption from speculation to premise. Accept eternal time and infinite space, and then analyze the implications of what that truth would mean. And all of a sudden, nearly all the mysteries of science unravel at your feet. That is what this theory of everything is trying to explain or promote. That there is, in fact, an explanation for nearly everything. And if you want to call it super determinism, that's fine. Because it's true. There is, in fact, something like superdeterminism that does not negate free will. The fact that your decisions might be driven by chemical interactions that cause your emotions in your brain and all of the different factors that surrounded every moment of your existence could correlate to how those chemical interactions define themselves and manifest does not negate free will. I make a decision to publish this podcast or not. I make choices all the time. The fact that those choices may be dictated behind the scenes by something not unnatural, not supernatural, not godlike, just pure physics. Chemical interactions drive our emotions and our brain thoughts, and memories dictate how we will do things. It is a combination of emotions and memories that form our wisdom and knowledge, intelligence, and whatever you want to call it, and define our behavior. It is our environment that we grew up in that defines so much of who we are and who we may become. And it's unfortunate that it needs to be that way, because everybody should have an equal opportunity to rise to greatness. There should not be a need for struggle, strife, famine, malnourishment, disease. So many things that are within our control should be common, base necessities of life that we should be able to provide to not just humans, but almost every species on this planet that we have the ability to help. That is our job as protectors of this planet, because that is why we are here. We are here because we are protectors of this planet, the single species capable of evolving to such a level that we can, through technology, prevent cataclysmic events. Extinction-level events can be avoided through science. And it is our responsibility not only to seek out every possible way to prevent an extinction-level event, but at the same time, provide the basic necessities of life. Clean water, fresh food, reliable medicine, protection from the elements, via housing and clothing, and internet access, access to information, knowledge, and understanding. That is what every able-bodied being should be able to experience. Not just humans, but other animals should be able to experience love, not only from within their own species, but other species. The love of multiple species is something we can eventually see. We see it now within any given household. You can have multiple different animals of different species coexisting and loving each other. That is the nurturing nature of an evolutionary process that shows what a symbiotic nature of the natural state of nature is. You and I exist because of a symbiotic relationship between more cells that do not have your DNA than those that do. You are functioning at peak levels due to cells that don't have your DNA. And more cells that don't have your DNA than those that do join you on your daily journey are in fact what helps you optimize your existence and be your best self. And this is a symbiotic relationship that has evolved over time and is not unique to humans. Separate biomes exist in many different ways. And how we got from conformal cyclocosmology to the biomes of infinite regression, and the fact that we will never find the smallest insect or being. We may find the smallest measurable to a certain level, but there is no smallest particle of matter, no smallest wave of energy, no smallest collision. No smallest sign of life. Just as there is no largest or smallest measurement of time. No smallest or largest measurement of space. No smallest or largest measurement of mass. No smallest or largest measurement of energy. No smallest or largest measurement of heat and no smallest or largest measurement of luminosity in many different scale factors. It is the fact that your passage through space determines your passage through time that defines why, within the atom, what we see as 1 second could be 10,000 years or 100,000 years. And within that atomic layer, at a scale factor below, when their single second is 100,000 years, then a secondary atomic layer to us could come into existence and cease to exist in minutes of our time. Take that one level lower, and entire universes could come into existence and fade away in just 3 atomic layers. Because that's the nature of space-time. That's what special relativity tells us. Now, some of you have gotten to this point and said, wow, this guy's got some good ideas. Wow, he seems crazy. Who knows? But I'll tell you something. Right now, lock yourself in the quietest room you can find and concentrate all your energy and all your effort. 5 minutes. That's all I ask you. Spend 5 minutes focusing all your concentration on one ear and one ear only. And you will hear those societies that will far surpass humanity ever is capable of. I mean, humanity is capable of great things. I'm just somewhat pessimistic to what we may achieve. Other species don't piss away their only environment. They don't shit where they live. And they manage to exist for tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of years with technological evolution and science evolving. Something that we will throw away very quickly in the next 200 years. Every country on this planet is, and most of the rich people on this planet, are already spending time and resources preparing for doomsday instead of investing time and resources to making this planet better. That's what happens when we give up. Well, there's no need to give up. We can salvage our species and this planet if we begin to work together. Stop preparing for doomsday and start preparing for a future of unity and harmony amongst our species. And then someday we can become interstellar and potentially intergalactic. Because those species that become intergalactic set up huge, huge arrays to try to talk to that dark area of space where they see no stars, no galaxies. And it is the aggregation of those arrays, communication arrays, that we call tinnitus. Tinnitus exists within each inner ear at the tiniest muscles, the tiniest bones in the body. Hear vibrations far, far better than the strongest microscope, not microscopes, but microphones. And when we have a microphone that can far exceed the human ear and have zero noise cancellation, allow 100% feedback, and record what you hear, it'll hear just what our ears hear. Guaranteed. That is proof of infinite regression and the true nature of space and time. And I'm sorry if I blew your mind, and I'm even sorrier if I caused your tinnitus. Many people will walk away from this podcast with tinnitus that they've had this whole time and never noticed, because many people can ignore the noise. Well, everybody that's listening to this that already had tinnitus, the power is within you to ignore the noise. You have to learn to focus it out. Whatever it takes, it is within your control to squelch the sounds and the noise. Sure, you're going to hear it every once in a while, the loud ones. But the constant buzzing that never ends, every one of us hears. Every single human and every animal on this planet hears it. Because the quantity of atoms at the tiniest bones that touch within the ear will hear those symphonies within silence. And wow, we really stretched ourselves from conformal cosmology. But it is because there is a better answer. And the better answer is successive collision theory, where each collision is going to have those aggregations of eddies of hot spinning plasma creating a slowdown at the speed of light. Well, the first slowdowns may even occur at a higher speed than speed of light, where it begins to take on magnetic fields and pull apart and push, and those will slow down slower than the speed of the rest, and they will shoot off like tentacles. So we would expect strands with varying widths and varying lengths, but relative lengths that are similar. There will be a relative length that is similar. We can use that to leverage, once we learn superluminal physics, we can use that length to help determine the relative velocity between the two pockets that collided. But then you're going to end up with I lost my train of thought. Successive collision. So you get tentacles off these filaments, or strands off these filaments, where they're going to spawn off. They're going to shoot out of the sides, spinning offwards, rotating outwards in little tinier filaments. Then you break the speed of light, where the Higgs field begins to come into effect, and you have a secondary branching of that hot energy. So we would expect there to be a high energy stream of thickness to our cosmic filament web, a tertiary, secondary collisions and secondary things that are going to be a lower diameter, but width of these filaments, slower distances, they're not going to be as far, and all these things streaming off. And whatever streams off that is due to the Higgs boson will have minimal strands spinning off of them. Because at that point, you're going to have a coalition of mass and energy to cause the first super population 3 stars that are going to explode and create nebulous gas expanding outwards. So where all of these tiny filaments we should see expanding nebulous gas coming out of them from that first population of stars of stellar explosions that happen. Then the second generation of stars are going to have a second set of supernovas, explosions, to put us to close to where we are now. And so we should predict, if successive collision theory is correct, huge filaments, different thicknesses, relative lengths that are similar, secondary filaments, and third filaments. And I predict that there may be some fourth filaments and fifth filaments that are lower and lower and lower in width and energy content and heat output. And they would be expected to be rotating. They would, in fact, be predicted to be rotating. If successive collision theory is correct, we would predict harmonic galactic inclinations, harmonic quasar axes, harmonic periodic revolutions of galaxies. Many of these factors, harmonic temperatures, things that we use, the horizon problem, like we came up with the inflation, the theory of inflation to promote the horizon problem as a solution, and we don't need it. When we accept the kinetic energy involved in all these different collisions was so close, and the relative velocity and relative degrees of impact on the majority of collisions were similar. And there's so much more about this if you go back to the beginning of the podcast, but conformal cyclic cosmology, I'm sorry, there is cyclic cosmology, but is not due to inflation, therefore the conformal nature of it is incorrect. Roger Penrose, I have much respect for you. And I love the way you came up with this. Because there is, in fact, science behind it. That's what some people don't get. Some people just throw it out. And they don't even understand how there is legitimate concepts behind it. The problem is that's not really the nature of space-time and how it all works together. But either way, that's my two cents. And if you don't like it, rebate forms are available upon request. Live long and prosper. May the force be with you. 42.